Okay. So today is an Airport Advisory Commission, July 21st, and I will do roll call if that is okay.
Please do.
Brendan O'Mara is absent. John Foley?
Present.
Lieutenant Commander Nathan Edgecombe is absent. Douglas Bernizer?
Yes, I'm here.
Kat Pence?
Present.
Okay. Ken Geddes?
And so today is the Airport Advisory Commission, July 21st, and I will do roll call if that is okay.
I have to stop this.
Please do.
Brendan O'Mara is absent. John Foley?
Present.
Lieutenant?
Okay, it's working. It's just like to talk back.
You know how much of a delay we have unless, you know, if we say something.
So we know we have a quorum.
Yep. So you're ready to go.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll call this meeting to order, and I guess the first agenda item is to approve the agenda. Has everyone received and reviewed it?
Yes.
Any additions needed?
Yes.
Yes, Ken, did you have something?
Yes, I asked for a couple times to have an item added to the agenda.
Okay. Now, I believe this was the what you wanted to present on off-grid electric information?
Yes, I have a short PowerPoint presentation.
Sure. I was assuming that we would cover that under items for commission discussion, if that's okay with you?
Well, I'd like to see it as an item.
So how would you like to handle that? We can discuss it tonight. The agenda is out. I guess we can add it on officially to the agenda.
Yes.
Do we need a motion to do that, or can we just have it listed on the minutes?
Where would we put it?
Do you want to add an item under number 6, or would you like it under 4?
Is that general discussion?
It's just commission discussion under number 6.
Yeah, that's fine.
And what was the title of it again?
Let's call it electric generation.
Okay. And so you'll make a motion to add that to the agenda.
Do we need a motion?
Yes.
I move it.
All right, do we get a second there?
Yes.
Add that to the agenda?
I need a second.
I second.
All right, thank you. Well, as we do with these virtual meetings, we'll do a roll call vote to add that to the agenda. So I call your name if you can indicate if you're in favor of adding that item to the agenda. Doug Brenizer?
Yes.
Ken Geddes?
Yes.
Kat Pence?
Yes.
Neil White?
Yes.
And John Foley says yes. So we'll just add that to the agenda.
Very good.
Neil, did you have, when we talked before, I apologize for getting this out of the way, but when we talked between the last meeting, I think you had mentioned something about lead emissions at Aurora or Hillsboro. Did you have anything to share there?
There was a report done for the lead emissions at the Aurora Airport, but I just wanted to make it aware that the report has been done. I don't have anything to add about it.
Okay. Well, we can touch on that during after Ken's thing, and just you can point us to that information. All right. So with that update to the agenda, I guess we've already approved the agenda as amended, right?
Correct.
All right. So then the next agenda item is approval of minutes. And has everyone received and reviewed the minutes from the April 21st meeting?
Yes.
All
right. Are there any corrections needed to the minutes?
No.
Okay. I had one observation, and I don't know if we need to correct it or not, but I noted that the agenda or the minutes from the last meeting, we talked about some email comments that were submitted by Brent, and it mentions an attachment, and there's no attachment.
The attachment is online with the minutes. I didn't attach it to the packet, but it has been online ever since the last meeting. So
it
is there.
All right, so I don't think we need to change anything there. So with that said, could I get a motion to approve the minutes?
Some motion.
All right, can I get a second?
Second.
All right, we'll do a roll call vote. Doug Brenneiser?
Yes.
Brendan, hold on, Ken Geddes?
Yes.
Kat Pence?
Yes.
Neil White?
Yes.
And John Foley votes yes. All right, with the minutes approved, our next item are the reports. And I guess, John, you were going to cover the Tower Chief report and your report?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Yeah, Rob was not able to make the meeting tonight. They are down two controllers now. So the remaining three are working a significant amount of overtime. But Rob did share with me some comments that he wanted me to share with the commission. The April through June traffic count was 12,754 operations, so April, May, June. That's a pretty stout number. I actually added to that year-to-date through June 30th, so halfway through the year, we've had a total of 21,041 operations, which is the highest six-month pool over a decade. So we're on pace to have well over 40,000 operations for the year. His busiest day was 300 operations. He did note there were four mandatory occurrence reports that happened in the last quarter. On May 12th, he had a helicopter land on taxiway Bravo without clearance. Just a reminder, mandatory occurrence reports are events that happen that the air traffic control tower is mandated to report these to the FAA for investigation. Had a helicopter land taxiway Bravo without clearance. On June 15th, they had a helicopter on Plymouth Runway 31, which reported a UAS, unmanned aerial system, I guess UAS, 2 miles southeast of Runway 13. Helicopter maneuvered away from the UAS and landed without incident. Tower notified FAA Regional Operations Center and Marion County Dispatch. I haven't heard any feedback on if they were able to find who was flying that. What people are doing drones. On June 20th, they had a Cessna 172 that crossed the hold short line for runway 34 without clearance. There was a Cessna that was in a traffic pattern and was instructed to cancel landing clearance and extend the downwind. And then on June 30th, they had a Beach 99 departing runway 16 on an IFR flight plan via the Salem 4 departure. That aircraft was instructed to turn left heading 340 and climb and maintain 090. The Beach 99 departed runway 16 but turned right heading to 340 instead of left. And the Salem 4 departure off of runway 16 only allows for left turns. So Seattle Center and Salem Air Traffic Control both filed mandatory occurrence reports for that deviation. So all four were pilot deviations. They reported no in-flight equipment malfunctions, no accidents or incidents, no environmental issues, no equipment malfunctions. And then finally, he just wanted to note that he had two personnel that resigned in the second quarter, and then he has two new hires starting August of 2021. So hopefully by September, they'll be back to full staffing. That was all the information that he provided me for the air traffic manager report. Is there any questions? I can take note, get back to Rob and respond if anybody has any questions.
Any questions from the commission? All right, did you have a manager report as well, John?
I do, so yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got just two items. I didn't submit my written report as I typically do in the packet that was emailed out. I only have two. What I thought were going to be two short reports, but one actually was interesting enough that I actually turned into a small little PowerPoint presentation. Brent would be familiar with it too. It has to do with the aircraft electric charging station and company that we're working with. So, but first I wanted to share a brief update on our taxiway improvement project that was scheduled to get underway this summer. I mentioned in the last meeting the project was going out to bid. It did go out to bid on May 4th. Bids were opened on June 8th. The city received two bids. Both came in higher than budgeted.
FAA indicated there was enough funding to accommodate the higher bids, but both bidders exceeded specific line items in the bid that are mandated by FAA to be capped at a certain level. So the city had to reject both of those bids for being non-responsive. The city alerted the bidders to their errors. The project is currently out for rebid with a new opening date of August 3rd. What that means, though, is that by the time the bids are open, the grants are awarded, and all the paperwork is done, it's going to be too late in the season to complete it in time for the fall-winter weather. So the project's now delayed until May of 2022. So we'll have the bids done, but we won't be able to do construction this summer. I guess the only downside to that, really, the grant funding, I've confirmed, is still in place. We won't lose any of our grant funding. It's 100% federally funded project, and the pavement will be 9 months older by the time it gets rehabilitated. So there's really no downside other than that. It's just going to be a year later. So.
I was curious, are we bidding at the, you know, I think everything that these days is having impacts due to, you know, supply shortages and things like that,
right?
If that was affecting the prices, are we locking in a bad price now when we might get a better one?
No, we weren't able to do anything with either bids because neither of them conformed with FAA requirements. So the new bids, assuming they both come back in, hopefully lower than the previous ones, but we won't know. Assuming those are both responsive and meet all the FAA requirements, then those will be locked in until next spring.
And I assume that there's no impact on air traffic using those taxiways?
No, that's correct. No impact at all to aircraft or airport operation.
Just another question, and this maybe, I don't know if I want to belabor it, but is there any way to, I mean, when the city saw the bid or you saw the bid, did we know that those things were going to hit those limits? Is there an education thing you could do with the bidders on
that? Well, the interesting thing is it's noted in the bid packet, which is a very, very thick document. If you've ever seen a bid document, it's got a lot of information there. It's noted in there as a line item that there are certain line items that the FAA caps. So that way contractors can't load up a certain line item like mobilization or traffic control and try and put all their profit in those line items. So the FAA caps those. It's noted in the bid document, but either both bidders missed that or they just refused to acknowledge it. So they were alerted to that error and reminded that in the document there are specific line items that they can't exceed. So it could be potentially neither of them will respond in second bid. It could be that they'll respond and they'll raise other prices. You know, hopefully we'll get lower bids than we got before. It's a terrible, terrible time to be out to bid for any project because probably costs have gone through the roof. There's supply chain shortages and things like that. So originally, we wanted to wait until the fall or even winter months to rebid to see if the supply chain things worked out and the cost of construction had come down. But if we did that, we would have been putting our grants at risk. The FAA wants to get these grants written and out the door before the end of the federal fiscal year on September 30. So they strongly encouraged us to go out to bid now and get that done before the end of the fiscal year. So that's the schedule.
All right. Thank you.
Hope that answered your question. The second thing I wanted to share, and I just want to go ahead and do a quick PowerPoint if you'll indulge me. Spend a little bit of time putting together. There's some really interesting information here that I want to share. So I'm going to try and put a screen share thing here. It won't take but a few minutes.
While you're looking for that, has anyone heard from Brandon? I don't recall the last time he's made a meeting.
He did say he wasn't going to be able to make this one.
I did hear from him, and he just advised that he wasn't going to be able to make it. That was the only communication I've had with him.
And I believe he's
alive and well.
Absolutely.
At the last meeting.
If you go to the Oregon Pilots, you'll find lots of pictures of him out flying. So I know he's okay.
Able to fly.
He had some conflict with his schedule, I think.
Okay. If I did this correctly, I should be sharing a screen. Is this a Beta Flight Recharge donor?
Yeah, I can see it.
Everyone can see that? Great. Okay. I'm going to move some things around on my three screens here. So the airport's in discussions with a company called Beta Technologies, which is an electric aircraft manufacturer based in Burlington, Vermont. And they're developing electric VTOL, vertical takeoff and landing, urban air mobility and cargo aircraft. And we're talking to them about installing a rapid charging location at the Salem Airport. So I thought, just to give you a little bit of background on the company and kind of what they're doing and how we fit into that picture, I wanted to share a few slides with you. This is a picture of their, what they call their ALIA 250C aircraft. It's a 5-passenger, 1-pilot, short-haul, urban air mobility, UAM, aircraft, which has a range of about 200 to 250 miles and a cargo configuration that can carry about 1,400 pounds of cargo. I think this picture here is, I believe they told me, is a flight testing aircraft, so the lift rotors, those 4 lift rotors, are removed, so only folding flight is available in this picture. There's one with the rotors attached, so it's a top view of the aircraft with lift rotors installed, which provides for the vertical takeoff and land. And then, of course, it has forward flight as well. They're on the verge of gaining their FAA certification with these aircraft, so they're moving pretty quickly through their development and flight test. A couple other pictures. This is the front view of the aircraft. It can be mounted with skids, which is what's shown here, similar to a helicopter, or it can be modified with landing gear to allow for a standard aircraft taxi, so that if they're in a location where they don't have the ability to do vertical takeoff and landing, they can still taxi in. That's what this picture here shows. So it's a modified landing gear configuration, which essentially acts like a skid on wheels for forward down taxi to and from location with the default is in motion, which would probably be the case here. I'll explain why in a little bit. Interesting, and I'm going to read this right off of the website, so I thought this was fascinating. This is from a news story in April 2021. UPS, together with its UPS Flight Forward subsidiary, plans to purchase electric VTOL aircraft from Beta Technologies to augment its air service for select small and mid-sized markets. Excuse me. These aircraft will take off and land on property at UPS facilities in a whisper quiet fashion, reducing time in transit, vehicle emissions, and operating costs. The Beta aircraft's 1,400-pound capacity is ideally suited to more quickly and sustainably transport time-sensitive deliveries that would otherwise fly on small fixed-wing aircraft. UPS's use of the aircraft will benefit entities such as healthcare providers, thousands of small and medium-sized businesses, and other companies in smaller communities. With a 250-mile range and cruising speed of up to 170 miles per hour, UPS will be able to plan a series of short routes or one long route on a single charge to meet its customer needs. UPS has also reserved Beta's recharging station for a seamless and fully integrated electric aviation system. The Beta charging station helps ensure safe and rapid charging of the aircraft in under 1 hour and facilitates a quick turnaround for the loading and unloading of cargo. Beta's aircraft are designed to someday operate autonomously as technologies and regulations are established. UPS Flight Forward received the first U.S. Federal Aviation Administration Part 135 standard air carrier certification to operate a drone airline and is operating daily revenue-generating flights with drones. The FAA certification also enables UPS Flight Forward to fly payloads of up to 7,500 pounds, either with an operator or autonomously. The first 10 aircraft of Beta's aircraft are scheduled for a 2024 delivery, and UPS plans to purchase up to 150 of these aircraft. So this technology is moving quickly, and obviously they've got some big players in the market. Similarly, this was published in April 2021 as well. Blade Urban Air Mobility, known as Blade, announced an agreement through which Blade will secure up to 20 Beta electrical VTOL aircraft, becoming the company's first passenger service aircraft. Blade currently flies passengers in and out of congested urban areas via traditional rotorcraft and is transitioning towards quieter, zero-emissions aircraft. They're scheduled for deliveries also in 2024. Excuse me. With such a short range, it's essential that Beta builds out a nationwide network of rapid charging stations. This map, which has since been updated, but I don't have a copy of the update to share with you, shows their East Coast build-out plan. The green dots are current operational locations, the purple dots are locations under construction, and the gray dots are in the planning stages. This map has been recently updated to include a California loop, as well as a number of stations at airports in Oregon and Washington to provide Pacific Northwest operational coverage. Again, I don't have that map. But it shows a loop that basically goes from Spokane around down through Oregon and back up to Spokane. Should Salem be able to accommodate a charging station, location that will likely be the first of its kind in the Pacific Northwest. And we're pretty excited about that possibility. This is a picture of their standalone ground-based charging station, and it operates with a credit card, much like a self-serve fuel facility. So you can bring your airplane up, plug it in, run your card, and you know, it charges you accordingly for the power. Estimated charging time for their aircraft is 50 to 60 minutes, and they expect to be able to serve all electric aircraft types, not only their own aircraft, as most will have standard servicing ports. And for those manufacturers that are developing aircraft without a similar port, they're developing adapters to be able to serve all electric aircraft. Now, one thing they shared with me is that they've learned a lot from the automotive industry about how not to build automobiles with their own specific chargers, because then you can't use them nationwide. So they're putting a lot of thought into this. This is an example of an elevated landing charging pad. And down below are offices, pilot lounge, pilot map rooms, a kitchen, and other amenities to provide pilots a place to rest and prepare for the next flight without having to use existing FBO facilities if, you know, since they're not purchasing fuel or anything for their business. It also provides passengers a convenient place to meet and greet and get ready for a flight. In the next master plan update that we're going to undertake, presumably next year, Salem might consider setting some land aside to accommodate this type of building. I think a lot of airports now have to start thinking through where they would put these facilities. This is an example of that landing pad for night operations. And then finally, given the wingspan size of this aircraft, which is about 50 feet, it's about the size of a Pilatus PC-12, as well as other electric aircraft under development, the proposed charging station location, which is just south, I don't know how you can see this, it's just south of the flight deck restaurant on the inside of the fence. And it would require some ramp modifications to accommodate aircraft of this size, which are in Aircraft Design Group 2, that's what ADG2 means on this map. The rest of our ramp is Aircraft Design Group 1, which are smaller aircraft, Cessnas and Pipers and those types of things. So this diagram is one such concept, which we would provide lead-in lines to up to 3 parking spots here, a designated parking area, much like we do at helo pads. My presumption is there'll be some sort of a green color to identify electric only parking. And then, of course, we need to provide sufficient wingtip clearance away from existing aircraft hiding. Excuse me. We also wanted to explore expandability in this location because they're asking for one charging location. But on the chance that this technology advances quickly enough and one spot becomes insufficient, we want to make sure there was some growth opportunity here so we can accommodate at least 3, if not 4, parking spaces. We feel pretty comfortable that that would work in this location with minimal disruption to the existing ramp. We'd take out a few tie downs. Move a couple of tie downs, but then we'd have plenty of room to get these airplanes in and out. beyond this, Salem would likely move all of its electric charging pads to a set-aside location somewhere else on the airport, particularly if there's a desire for those elevated landing pads that I showed in the previous slide. You'll also note here they suggested that since they were going to put in a charging station for aircraft, they would also accommodate a small green dot to put 2 charging locations in at the flight deck parking lot, those last 2 parking spaces. So we could have a couple of automobile charging stations as well as up to 3 aircraft charging stations. So in summary, we're working with Beta, our consultants, PGE for the power requirements, and then eventually the FAA, so that we can seek approval to install aircraft electric charging stations in Salem. My hope, as quickly as this conversation is moving along, is that this would be up and running by the end of 2021, sometime between now and the end of the year.
Really? That's quick?
Pretty quick, yeah. They're investing millions, tens, probably hundreds of millions of dollars in charging stations across the country. and essentially, this will be at no cost to the airport. All of the line extensions and installation of these facilities would be on their dime. And then there's an agreement for how, you know, revenue is generated and what percent of the revenue and who it goes to and those sorts of things. So Brent DeHart, who I know is on this call, he's been a part of these discussions as well. We've talked about that being an alternative to fuel, having electric fuel as opposed to diesel fuel or jet or ab gas. So we may end up where it works out with, you know, Brent's company is the provider of all fuel services on the airport, and we lease the land to Brent, no such thing. So we're having some of those discussions too. So Brent's part of that discussion as well. So it's moving pretty quickly, and I've got a lot of the information we already need. In fact, I'm on a conference call tomorrow with the Burlington, folks at the Burlington Airport with this company today, so that we can talk about some of their lessons learned in dealing with ramp modifications, FAA approvals, fire codes, some of those sorts of things. So we've reached out to a couple different airports that already have these, so that we can try not to do anything to do this. Pretty excited about it. Before I stop sharing, does anybody have any questions? Do you want to see any of the slides, anything like that?
Great, you could share the slides just after the meeting if that was possible.
Yep.
One question I had, I mean, this plan here has them, it appears that they would be taxiing in on those wheels rather than VTOL takeoffs next to the restaurant there.
That's correct. Yeah, and these aircraft don't have the ability to power back on their own, so they would have to have a pushback, though, which is where I think the FBO connection comes in really well. And then we're considering, one of the reasons it's still in draft form, is we're considering if, let's say all three charging pads were used and we had an aircraft waiting, is there a staging area, or is there an area to push these aircraft back once they're charged and bring another one up into the, so we're kind of looking at the ramp to see if there's some other tie downs that we might want to lose to have some staging areas for aircraft that are either waiting or that are done charging. But you're right, these would be not vertical takeoff and landing because of their proximity to other aircraft, to the fence, to the restaurant. And so we would talk to them about the need to have, you know, wheels on them. I don't know enough about the aircraft to know if they're all built with the wheels and they choose to use them or not, how that works. But we did indicate to them that we would likely want them to land on taxiway Charlie and then taxi into these spots, supposed to be
in. Notice the facility where they were landing on the roof had ADA ramps on the lower level, but I didn't see anything. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
I don't know how somebody in a wheelchair is going to get from the upper level down to the lower level.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't have enough information about this concept to know how it would meet ADA requirements and things, but certainly those would be questions that we would ask before we would do any installs here or anywhere.
Or it could be just all the landings are on the ground with the wheels, like we were discussing.
So it sounds like this would go in, if you're talking about by the end of the year, is that just having like an agreement in place, or is that actually building out, or?
Well, it would be, so according to PGE, they have enough power out on a power pole on 25th Street, just across the street from the entrance to the restaurant. So we'd have to trench power over across the parking lot to these locations. And of course, Beta would have to come in and install the pedestal and put the machines in and connect it, and then we'd have to do our ramp modifications and those sorts of things. So it's part agreement, but it's part also infrastructure improvements. It would take several parties. So, you know, it's an optimistic statement to say maybe by the end of the year. I don't know how quickly PGE could run the power over. PGE is also looking to the business department to see if there's any offsets or any financial assistance to encourage electric aircraft development. So this is new to them too. So there's a lot of questions we still have to answer. So it may not be that quickly if they do this, you know, this time next year, maybe sometime in spring. But it sounds like, you know, my simple mind, it sounds like a fairly straightforward install, just to move power over these locations, trench down the hill to the ramp, and then Beta will install their pedestals there.
John, in your presentation, the company's presentation that you were reading, it sounded as though it said these aircraft will land at a UPS facility.
Yep.
So there's UPS is anticipating building on Salem Airport?
I understood it to be that UPS is planning on building on their own facilities to accommodate these aircraft on their own facilities so they can load and unload cargo at their facilities and move them out to other locations, whether it be another airport or some other destination. But no, I don't know that they're building out anything on airports specifically. It sounded like, if I go back to the UPS presentation, it said, They would use the aircraft. These aircraft will take off and land on property at UPS facilities in a whisper quiet fashion, reducing time in transit, vehicle emissions, and operating costs. Where then they go out to, I suppose, depends on what the destination needs to be. It could presumably be at an airport like ours. So, for instance, we have Ameriflight that flies in here now for UPS in a fixed wing, Beach 99. They unload and load that thing in an hour. FedEx does it in caravans, too. And I know the Cessna 208 Caravan has an electric version out test flying right now. So we could potentially have the all-electric cargo aircraft here before we have an electric passenger plane.
Where is the UPS facilities in Salem?
They park over on the ramp that's just south of the Flight Deck restaurant. I don't know that I have it on this slide here.
Is there a distribution warehouse in Salem?
No, no. The UPS doesn't have any sort of facilities here or anything. FedEx does just north of the terminal here, but UPS just does a, they have a drop box, and then they bring all of their trucks in, and they just service everything on the ramp when the aircraft arrives. Mm-hmm.
Well, they used to, UPS used to have a, I assume they still do, up and up. Kind of North Salem area.
They do. Yep, right. Yeah. The industrial district.
Yeah.
So that's the rest of my report. I just wanted to kind of give you some background on this discussion we're having with the electric charging company. I think is the way this technology is moving, and as quickly as they're building out these charging stations, as quickly as they're anxious to move, they're only able to move as fast as we can move and as fast as the FAA and the power company can move. But they're chomping at the bit to get these facilities built out so that they can service their aircraft or sell their aircraft nationwide.
Yeah, pretty neat to have you know, got the feedback from the city council the last meeting that they were interested in this, and then you come back at the next meeting and you have something that works.
Right. So I think, you know, based on coming on the heels of that, and I mentioned that today, I said your timing is perfect because I know this will be well received, I think, in the community. It's something that Ken mentioned as part of his presentation that he wants to make later. He wanted to talk about electric aircraft, I think, was part of that. And so part of the reason I wanted to share that was just to let you know we're in those discussions now, and it's something long term we're going to have to think through, again, where these locations would be for the elevated landing pads. And then again, do we need, you know, 2 1-mile runways, or do we need more space for a vertical takeoff and landing aircraft? That's the way of the future. Things we'll have to think about. And it's all new to airport planners and airport managers, so we're all sort of stepping through it as we go along. Okay, that, Mr. Chairman, that's the end of my airport manager's report. If there's nothing else, we can go ahead and move on to air service development.
Yeah.
I do have a question.
Go ahead, Neil.
Regarding John's report, for the October 2021 Airport Advisory Commission meeting, John, could we get an update on the Salem Airport Emergency Preparedness Plan?
I can absolutely do that for you.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any other questions for John? All right. If not, Brent, do you want to give us your presentation? We've been looking forward to it. You're on mute, I'm afraid. I don't know if Anita has to.
All right. Didn't want to interrupt John's presentation, so I'll silence myself. Yes, I'd be happy to give you a snapshot of where we are today. Obviously, I've been working on this getting close to 3 years, so I could talk all night, but I'll give you a snapshot of where we are today and just take whatever questions you guys want filled in on. Sound good?
That'd be great.
And John, if it's convenient or possible, I've got a few slides from our airport or airline presentations. I could share if I have permission.
Yeah, I believe you'd be able to share your screen too.
Oh, there you go.
Did it work?
Super. There you go.
It's up there.
All right. So I don't want to distract you with that too much, but I do want to show you a few of the things we're showing airlines. Right now, we just got back from our fourth airline air service development conference, and it can be best described as speed dating. And John's been to one, and you can imagine a room with 100 tables and a bunch of airline representatives and a bunch of airports just like Salem and many who are much larger trying to gain service or add to the service they have. So we have been speed dating and creating an education for the airlines. Primarily, our target has been to use a regional carrier such as SkyWest, to fly with a United, Alaska, American, some major air carriers ticket number. Our stated goal for Fly Salem is a major carrier to a major hub. Okay, so that's what we've promised the business community in terms of we'd be out there seeking to connect one-stop Salem to just about everywhere. So that means if we get San Francisco connections, then it's Salem, San Francisco, Cabo. It's Salem, San Francisco, Orlando. It's Salem, San Francisco, Narita. And that's kind of our goal. And we have both the traffic that's going to go to that destination, be it the Bay Area or the LA Basin or what have you, or Seattle, but also 100 different other places. So that's our stated goal. It's what we're after. We've been talking primarily with SkyWest, United. We've talked a few times to America, Alaska, and some smaller airlines that are a little bit more niche airlines, which would be a nice addition to the type of service we want to get, but certainly it's not in our targets. Most recently, surging to the forefront is an ultra-low-cost carrier, the ULCCs, they call it, in the industry. So think Allegiant Airlines, Spirit Airlines, Frontier Airlines, low-cost, no frills. There's one called Breeze Airways, and Breeze has built out, I think, 18 cities, John, in the East Coast. Southeast, as far as Texas, and then up to, I think, Hartford. When we met with them last month, they had already investigated us somewhat. They're looking to fill out a Western route network for their flights, ultra-low-cost carrier, about 110-seat aircraft to fly people to secondary airports. But there are dots on a map that it seemed like the scheduling crew were tasked to serve this market. And we think one of those markets for their build out is Portland. But to serve Portland does not suit their business model to pay PDX prices. And really the only alternative to PDX in this area of the country is Salem. So John has provided them some cost structures that are very favorable for an ultra low cost carrier. They are saying they'd like to do a site visit in early fall as they get through their busy summer months because they're still launching new cities on their East Coast. It's very, very positive. It may very well be that a year from now we will have Breeze being our first commercial carrier. So even though it falls short of what our stated goal is, it may very well allow us to prove ourselves and get our stated goal of a major carrier if we start filling these routes. Breeze would be two flights per week to two different locations, they said. So four flights per week total, probably to the LA Basin. And unknown what the other one is, but I'd probably guess on a Phoenix, probably something like Phoenix. So that's the situation with Breeze. We're very positive about them. We're going to see them again next month at the conference that's hosted by our consultant. The news from Alaska is not great. A lot of us have that Alaska credit card in our wallet, and we'd love to see a connection to Seattle and beyond. And Seattle, Alaska is not having a good experience at Painfield. Everett, Washington is billed as an alternative to getting to busy SeaTac, but it has not been a good experience for them. So we would be seen as an alternative to a busier Portland metro market. And that's not a good comparison for us because they're getting burned in Everett. So I'll show you a few slides in terms of what are we showing them? Because frankly, we're spending a couple of years here giving them an education. You look at all these cities, us right here on the right-hand side of the chart, our growth rate is 8.8%. We're growing faster than Medford, Eugene, Santa Barbara, Anchorage, San Luis Obispo, Santa Rosa, and Yakima. All of them have commercial service. If you look at the left-hand side, we're larger than Anchorage, Eugene, San Luis Obispo, Pasco, Yakima, they all have commercial service. Tri-Cities has got 4 airlines and 11 flights a day. This is a little dated, by the way, because there's a new slide, but this growth in population is still what we're telling them. So we are twice the size of Medford, more than twice the size of Bend, Redmond Market as a population, right? So that surprises a lot of people because they, if they're not from the area and they're not Northwest folks, they don't know the difference between the Mid Valley, which we're talking about. Sorry. Trying to find the map of our area here. So might be hard to see on your screens, but this light green area is what we're saying is our catchment area that we think from which we will draw. And we have purchased data, and again, updated data. We know how many tickets are being purchased from each zip code, what they paid for it, and where they went. So we are not working on projections. We're working on data when we present them. And believe it or not, other than the Salem-Kaiser zip codes, the next highest demand is coming from Corvallis. And Corvallis is driving right through us in order to get the PDX. So that's our catchment area. It's darn near 600,000 people. We are not Gladstone. We are not Troutdale. We are not Oregon City. We're not something that's glommed onto the metro market. We're the second largest and fastest growing MSA, Metropolitan Statistical Area, in the state. Yeah, and it's, and wow, is we're getting that. We're getting that from an American who literally said, you know, you really weren't on our radar, but now you are. The last thing that America said to us is, when we sit here at these tables during these conferences, 95% of what we hear, we already know. We didn't know any of this. So really important that we're out there spending the money, spending the time to get it done. So the other slide that pairs with this one about population is the economy. You can see here our economy is growing faster than all these other cities in the Northwest that all have commercial air service. Right? You can see on the left side of the screen the size of ours compared to Eugene, San Luis Obispo, and so forth. So our economy is twice the size of Medford's economy. 71% larger than Bend Redmond. Again, there's a little dated, but you guys get the idea. And then Medford, of course, has 5 airlines and 13 daily departures. We're trying to get 2 daily departures, 2 50-seat regional jets to a hub and connect Salem to the world. One last thing on presentation for them. This is also a surprise because they have not done this marketing work. Alaska has enormous market share out of PDX. They did not know that they only have a quarter of the market share in the Mid-Valley. We are a different market. So you can see Southwest has 22% of the flights that are being booked out of our catchment area. United 15, Delta 12, American 12. So what this means to them is there's less brand loyalty and there's opportunity for market share. And again, this is one of the things that we're showing that even the airlines had not really known about our market. And I think it's a surprise to a lot of people that live here, that the 600,000 people and how many tickets are being sold. Enough tickets are being sold that if we had 50-seat regional aircraft and we needed to fill all of them, we could fill 32 flights a day if we took them all. We're not going to get 32 flights a day. We're not going to get everybody. We don't need to get everybody. We need to get approximately 1 out of 10 people who, as of 2019, pre-pandemic, are already flying. So if you'd ask me, I would say our first likely commercial service is going to be Breeze. I would imagine they would announce in the first or second quarter next year. I'm being optimistic, but that would be the most likely scenario. If they announce, it may accelerate the interest we already have from Allegiant Airlines. They've shown great interest in us. We're kind of in their wheelhouse because we're secondary market, and we like to fly to the sun. So Allegiant likes to fly people to Vegas, Phoenix, Palm Springs, and secondary market, a couple flights a week. So the only reason, I think we were very, very short, on the very, very short list coming into this spring, and they got foiled by PDX, who offered Allegiant 3 years of free operations at PDX, or 2 years, I tell you. So they're like, okay, we'll operate out of the, we'll have out of PDX at a zero cost environment. Otherwise, I think we may have gotten Allegiant earlier. But it's certainly going to accelerate their look at us if the other low-cost carrier agrees that says we're going to fly here and we start filling the seats. Okay? Did I say anything of something you wanted to know?
I think I missed it, but did the does Breeze, where were their connections to? Do you know, or is it still TBD?
They have not. They have not announced their West Coast network, but they would be probably Burbank, like Avelo is using, a secondary LA basin. They said for us, they said to us, for you guys, we'd be looking at probably two destinations twice a week. One of them is going to be in LA, and we'll do a little, you know, we'll study which the other one is. But our statistics know that the number one destination for our market is LA basin. Second is Vegas, believe it or not, because apparently we like to gamble. Third is the Bay Area, and the fourth is Phoenix. So the places that they would fly, three out of four of them are aligned with where our market demand is. Did that answer your question?
It did, yes, thank you.
I didn't talk much about Fly Salem as an organization or our efforts. I just wanted to give you a snapshot. Of course, we're anchored by Travel Salem, the Salem Chamber and SEDCOR in terms of support in those organizations and representing them as we go pitch to airlines. The other piece that a lot of people don't really understand is we need to come to the table with a recruitment package. We need a package that mitigates the risk that they'll take. And that's Mary, well, I'm going to these things, and there's 50 to 60 to well over 100 airlines. They all have persuasive stories like we do. And they have a recruitment package. And that we're in the recruiting seat. So we need a couple years of waived fees from the city. We need the ability to market the airline's services when they come. And we need some sort of risk mitigation. And we've been focusing on a tool called Minimum Revenue Guarantee, or MRG. And I would frankly say the MRG is a slush fund. I mean, it's money that right now we have over $700,000 of private sector money that has been willing to put in the pot and say, if you do not reach a minimum revenue, we will guarantee it and we'll backfill that during the first 2 years of startup. And that all of those things are negotiated down the line. I'm sure we don't have time in your meeting for me to go into it in detail, but that's a snapshot of some risk mitigation money, some fee waivers, some marketing money, and so forth. We've already have the demographics and the economy to support it.
So Brent, I started to hear, or maybe I was hearing, there was, is this an ask from the city on assistance here? I guess, is there something specific you're looking for from the AAC out of this presentation, or?
No, we don't currently have an ask. Up till now, we've been able to operate with privately raised money, mm-hmm. a fair bit of my own, and a grant we got from the Oregon Department of Aviation, the ROAR grant, and that helps us pay the consultant. We did a nice fundraiser just prior to COVID shutting everything down and raised some matching funds so we could operate. You know, we're going to be looking at the need for funds in the next 12 months or so, and how we're going to raise that is a bit of a question mark. But we just signed a new consulting agreement with the consultant to stretch another couple of years because, frankly, we think he's going to be negotiating the airlines and what our compensation package is, or our commitment packages and so forth. So at this time, we don't really need anything. I know that John is trying to build into his budget that fee waivers or rent waivers or what the airline needs. That would probably have to go to City Council. And at that time, you guys, it would be great to have a recommendation that they approve it. It's fairly standard what we're seeing out there. We're not, I mean, it's the FAA, John. They only allow you to offer, you know, these kinds of incentives for a 24-month period.
That's correct.
So everybody has that on the table.
That's going to be a minimum expectation from any of them. Yeah. The other piece I've mentioned to the AAC prior is this small community air service development grant that we've applied for now for the second or maybe third year in a row. If we are awarded a SCASB grant, that would also have to go to council for acceptance of that grant. So that would also come through the AAC for a recommendation. So,
yeah, I don't know, guys, we had 7 out of 9 votes to apply for the grant. I'd like to think we'll have 7 out of 9 to accept the grant should we get it. We should know by Labor Day. That money goes into the minimum revenue guarantee, and that helps us talk, okay, now we're fully funded with our minimum revenue guarantee, and it's a different situation with the airlines, because then we'll have, you know, $1.5 million of minimum revenue guarantee, and that's a good package. It's not as good as some. I mean, Rochester, Minnesota came with like $3 million to 2 different airlines and just raised a ton of money to guarantee their flights, and they launched a new service in the middle of the pandemic. It's crazy.
Was there any questions for Brent from the commission? Well, I should ask, did you finish your presentation?
There's so many things I could tell you. I think timeline wise, the best case scenario is an announcement in the second quarter next year. You know our goal, kind of in it for the long haul. And I guess it would help if you understood some of our hurdles. I feel like we're trying to jump through a train window that's open because we're fighting for resources. We're convincing an airline that if they put the resources in Salem, they'll make more money than if they put it somewhere else, right? So we've got a really great presentation and value proposition. But if they can make more money by adding one more flight from Yakima to Salt Lake City, that's what they're going to do because it's less risk. They already have infrastructure there, you know, and so we have to convince them you'll make more money here long term. And then they have to have an aircraft and pilots. And pilots, for those of you, Kat, who might want to be a pilot as a career, just teasing her a little bit. The 18 months ago, Mr. Chair, our problem was SkyWest did not have pilots in an airplane because the airlines were exploding. 18 months ago, as fast as they could hire a pilot and buy an airplane, the major carriers were contracting them to fly on their behalf at zero risk. There's no resources. So the irony of the is that now there's airplanes sitting on the ground that we need. But we need to get the service before the airline industry becomes red hot again, which for vacation travelers, it's already pretty hot. For vacational travelers, it's over 80% of pre-pandemic levels, of 2019 levels. And some for the ultra low-cost carriers, some of them are bigger than they were pre-pandemic already. So we need to get our SCASD grant, get our service launched before things are so red hot, they'll go, there's no pilots, there's no planes. So it's a tough timing situation, and we 100% believe it's going to be successful, but we have to find the period of time where all the stars are aligned, and then we got to jump in, and we have to support it as a community, as a region, and once we get it, I think we'll never lose it. Honestly, I mean, the numbers are the numbers, and Portland is getting harder and harder to drive through, and just you look at how far away we are from PDX. I mean, the size and the capacity of the airport, we have so many things going for us. People are shocked. When you tell Alaska, and like, we're leaving 3.5 hours before our flight, minimum. And they're like, what? They had no idea. They think we're right next to PDX. And I'm like, yeah, we're tired of having another night away from home because we're spending the night in PDX and loss of productivity for the business traveler and all these other things. So anyway, education, we're making headway. People know who we are now and they're aware of the market. Now we have to line up all of those things and jump through that window.
All right. Well, thank you, Brent. Do we have any questions from the commission for Brent? All right. If not, I think we can move on to the next part of the agenda, which is action items. And we do not have any action items on the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, John, for the opportunity.
Oh, thanks, sorry, Brent. Thank you.
Very much. That was a great presentation.
Thank
you. Talk soon.
All right. So item six, items for commission discussion. I think, Ken, this is where you had something for us. Are you ready to present? Uh-oh, you're on mute. Oh, there you go.
There we go. Yeah, find your share you're... from John.
Is someone working to get Ken the ability to share?
He has ability. He's okay.
Okay.
Brent was able to do it. Ken should be able to do it.
So I think, at least on my screen, if you go to the bottom and it says share screen, you should be able to.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I need to.
Yep. At the bottom of the screen, Ken, there should be a green button that says share screen. It's an up arrow, and then if you click that, it'll show whatever screen you're wanting to share with us.
Okay.
There it comes.
You got it?
We haven't seen it yet.
There it comes.
All right. Let's see. There is a slideshow. It's underneath the...
Oh, it's right in the middle. Keep going over to your right.
Yep.
Well, I get...
It says slideshow.
Well, I can't see it because the zoom...
It's in the gray area, right underneath the magenta banner, in the middle of this, of that section.
He's saying that his zoom screen is in the way. You can grab your zoom screen and slide it to the side. So you can see your underneath screen, that might be.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
All right. Perfect. You should see some pretty flowers.
We do.
Okay. Well, more or less. Tulip flower wind turbines is kind of the focus of this part. Let me move that out of the way. And it's all through the topic of getting off the grid, meaning out of Portland electric supplying power directly. And somewhere. So I can go to the next. There we go. And this slide shows that the state of Oregon has just on the 17th, the governor signed this bill about reducing, setting a goal for the reduction of zero emissions by 2040. And it includes the $50 million in grants for community renewable energy projects in cities other than Portland. So there's $50 million up for grabs by the cities other than Portland for different emission elimination projects. And part of this idea is to create a public-private partnership with one of the universities. Willamette has an environmental engineering department that can look at the full picture of the devices, which devices would be most appropriate, which are the most climate friendly. Sometimes you build these off-grid devices, solar panels and wind generators that require extra building using carbon sources, and also in the recycling of the products once you're done with it. Maybe after a 20-year lifespan, you've got to consider what's happening with those devices. There we go. These wind turbine, this particular tulip flower turbine, comes in three different sizes. The tallest being 19 feet tall, that's about a two-story building. The smaller one is like 3 feet tall, and a medium one is about 9 feet tall. And these could be located at different places outside of the flight paths of the runways. And here's some more specifics on the smaller, I guess the medium one, 3 feet, 3 meters in height, that's the 9 feet tall. Imagine as you're going down Mission Boulevard, outside of the flight path, of course, there's some trees and light poles that are taller than 9 feet, but you have a row of these tulip-looking wind turbines providing some off-the-grid electricity. Here's some more specifications about the 3 foot tall, or excuse me, 9 foot tall, 3 meter tall, I guess 2 meter tall, with 1 meter in diameter, producing 500 watts of electricity, with a yearly output of 3 turbines at 6 milliseconds. That's an average. Can produce 1,500 to 3,000 kilowatts per year. Maximum RP is 120 RPMs. There's a governor on these that will stop it from turning at a high wind speed that may damage the electric generator. Notice these are vertical access rather than the tall horizontal access. Axis turbines you may see out in the country around Salem, those 100 foot tall wind turbines. This is vertical access. They come in all kinds of different sizes and models. There's some that don't rotate, that vibrate. There's some with four wings and more. So here's some of the specifications from this one company. Airport Environmental Programs, this is the FAA from April 2018. There's guidelines for evaluating solar energy updated in 2018. Then the Salem Youth Municipal Airport Master Plan that we're looking at in more detail, section 7.7, Natural Resources and Energy Supply. It talks more about water and air than it does renewable energy, climate change, although it addresses that issue to reduce petroleum use. Energy use, air emissions, water consumption are things that are part of our future. And we should have a off-grid annual goal to 2040 added to the master plan. So some consideration about what we will be doing in the future as part of the master plan. Then one use of electrical energy, I suggested that we have some billboards located facing the traffic areas, traffic signal areas. The only other traffic signal is on the east side coming out of the Walmart Lowe's area, but that's on the Army Guard property section of the airport, so I didn't include that. But some signs around promoting the airport. For example, the name of the airport, and upcoming air shows, events, tours, special flights. I was thinking of the blimp that was here a few years ago that was offering flights or special air show flights or whatever announcements. And then a rotating list of announcements for ad revenue by the permanent services of the airport. They should have a priority. The shuttle service, I believe, is in operation now. Is that true, John? I see his head nodding. Aircraft and automotive repair services available, flight training, auto truck and aircraft rentals, either through the airport or the trucks, the budget trucks that are out in the lot, or automobiles at the, is that a budget facility, auto facility on the west side of the airport? And then we have restaurants and cafes. I don't know about any cafes now, but I do know the flight deck is one restaurant. Any other local businesses located on the airport should have a priority in using the signs. Also, a rotating list of community service announcements, possibly, you know, wear your mask, get vaccinated, those type of announcements could be done through these digital signs provided, powered by this electrical off-grid electric. This is just a sample of one billboard. There's already a digital billboard located on Mission Boulevard as you're heading west, just west of the intersection there behind the Dairy Queen restaurant. There's a convenience store. It's above that that shows towards the westbound Mission traffic. The private billboard, excuse me. And then considered the electric charging stations that John was talking about. American Airlines, and this is from a article in CNN last month, that American and Virgin Atlantic have ordered electric taxis from Vertical Aerospace, so another source of airlines that will be Vertical Lift. American Airlines has agreed to pre-order up to 250 electric taxis, an option for another 100. A Dublin-based aircraft leasing company, Avalon, has pre-orders and options for 500 aircraft, and Virgin Atlantic has pre-ordered options up to 150 aircraft. So there's more than one source of these vertical lift airlines that will probably be coming to the area, and a source of airline traffic. This is a picture of some vehicle charging stations. Next to the Target store on Center is a row of these charging stations. So you can get a real live look at the charging stations. And locations that I thought about were on both sides of the General Aviation Terminal, the north side for the, it's not Zoom, it's Groom shuttle service in that area parking lot near the FedEx, and then on the south side of the terminal could service the General Aviation Terminal from that location as well as the traffic tower. And there's also another city, or no, a state office building south of the terminal that could use this. And then the south side of the flight deck, which is where they were talking, John was talking about as one location. And then I thought of the a portable battery located on one of our FBO trucks, put a big battery on it, and that is a portable way to go to our aircraft rather than having to have the aircraft come to the flight deck area as John proposed, but having a truck run by our FBO to provide electricity to aircraft. So that was another idea I had, and that's it. So any questions, comments?
I guess one observation, maybe it's a question for you and John. I think with this type of, it is a fairly large topic, I guess, obviously. Would these things be something we take up in the you know, update to the master plan? I know at least with the charging stations you mentioned there's activity going on now.
Yeah, those are all items that we can put into the master plan. What are our goals as the, I believe, the largest facility in the city, contiguous facility? I don't know if all the parks put together would be larger than the airport, but the airport's certainly the largest contiguous facility to address some of the climate change issues, as in off-the-grid electric generation. There's also the solar panels that we could put on top of the general aviation buildings, possibly the hangars, possibly on in the fields away from the traffic airport runways. I wouldn't want any interference with these devices from any air traffic. There's spots along 25th Avenue inside the fence that on the north end of the airport, but below the flight path of that runway is a row of where these wind turbines can be. They're colorful. If you look at the airport without the lights on, it's kind of, you know, the grass is dry this time of year. It's kind of dull, and these would certainly give a visual improvement to the airport, possibly negating some of the noise effects by having something very positive, art type of things happening around the airport in different locations.
Any other questions for Ken?
I just have a question, Ken, on why it is necessarily called off-grid. Why wouldn't the traditional power suppliers be adopting this sort of generation? Wouldn't they be amenable, and wouldn't they already have distribution ability?
Yeah, they have the ability to distribute power, and they have their own mandates to reduce power. But as a facility, we could also look at the climate and the climate changes and take action on our own. And there's that $20 million grant proposal that could pay for some of these projects. So this is just a list of ideas that I thought I would present and for discussion and inclusion in the master plan. So going into the future, we can establish a goal for our own need for power from Portland Electric, I had asked in my first email if John had those figures from the bills added up to what our annual power requirement is, and to be able to set a goal of reducing our demand, our need for that power from Portland General Electric.
The only reason I'm asking is, for the years that I've been associated with the, I know that John's budget isn't enormous, or he's led me to believe that it's budgeting. I don't know that I've ever actually studied it.
It's all your money.
There you go. What I can't imagine is that John would have people that could maintain those types of things, and that seems to put the airport into a business that they're not particularly familiar with or good at. That's my only question.
I would say, in terms of certainly solar power, wind power, and I've never heard of wind power in an airport, but if they're making these things now more efficient where they're not so tall, perhaps that's a possibility. But airports are generally leasing their property out to solar farms if they have available property. So they're typically privately owned, and then they get the, maybe they either reduce the lease or it's a lease-free property, but then they get the benefit of the solar power to help power the airport. But typically, you're right, Doug, I couldn't imagine any of that being an airport function, but it certainly could be, whether it's the public utility or a private company that would lease space or land from us, and that we would work out an agreement where it was a win-win for both. If we got to reduce our emissions and they got to use some of our property for green energy.
Got it.
Yep. We've actually been approached in the past about some acreage for solar farms. They need a lot of space. We don't have a significant amount of space to offer. And of course, then we have to do the cost-benefit analysis of what else are we not going to be able to develop on that space. What's the cost-benefit to the airport for long-term leases? So those things have come up in the past. We don't have a ton of land, which is typically the short answer for those types of things. But the wind turbines, if they're in a smaller parcel someplace, I don't imagine they could be on the airport. The FAA is very particular about what you can put on the airport and where. But any of this stuff is possible. I think you're right. I think in the next master plan, having some green energy goals, some emission reduction goals, having some charging station locations, the expansion of those things, I think are good ideas. It's great when we have a company like Beta that I talked about earlier, where they come in and they're willing to invest and spend the money and put the infrastructure in, so that, because Doug's right, we don't have the budget for those types of things. So whether it would be the larger city or the state or a county or a private entity, that's going to be the best way for us to go, for sure. And I think the same would be similar with billboards. I mean, certainly there would be an investment there. Revenue generation and advertising would be fantastic, but those things I don't imagine come cheap. And again, we'd have to think about location, height, the glare of LED out to aircraft, out in the various traffic patterns. So there's always a lot of things that come with that, but certainly they're good ideas and worthy of discussion.
All right, any other questions? Well, thank you, Ken, for your presentation. I appreciate it.
Ken, there's a button on your screen, too, probably that's a red button that says stop screen sharing.
Okay.
That'll pull your screen down and put us back into the area.
Yeah, I can see chat.
Oh, okay.
I was wondering if she dropped off.
That's the first time I've done a share.
That's great. Good job.
All right. Let's see. Was there any other items for us to discuss this evening? Under agenda item 6, items for commission discussion. All right, if not.
Okay, I'm sorry, that Neil had something earlier in the meeting he was going to discuss. Are we just making us aware of the Hillsborough emission report?
Yes, I did email John Pascal and John Foley that study. It's in your inbox now, but I think the bottom line, there is three lines to really kind of encapsulate that entire study. And I'll just read it directly to you. And this was a study done by the DEQ in 2014. And it says, the most recent monitoring data published by the DEQ for Hillsborough Field, located 1/4 mile from from HIL Hillsborough Airport show the 2013 annual average lead concentration was 0.0030 UG/M3, which is 50 times below the National Ambient Air Quality Standard and the ABC. And that was 50 times below the national standard. And if we look at Hillsborough, according to the AirNav data that I took just 10 minutes ago, Hillsborough Airport is running 695 operations per day. Salem is running 109 operations per day. So we are having six times less traffic. So we would be significantly less than 50 times below the National Ambient Air Quality Standard for lead emissions. Awesome. But like I said, the full report is in your inbox, John and John. So where we go from here, I just provided some data that I had ready for a congressional testimony a couple of years ago.
Nice. Thank you for that. Yeah, it's good to get some additional perspective on just how much lead is getting out there from general aviation. Lenny, any other questions for Neil on that? All right, if not, we can move on to the agenda item 7, which is the chair's report, and I don't have anything to add to what we've discussed this evening. So if there's nothing else, I think we can adjourn for this meeting.
All right. And Mr. Chairman, if I may, you and I talked before everybody else got on. My assumption is that in the October meeting, we'll be back to in-person meetings, but that's still to be determined. The city's trying to work through how it's going to handle its boards and commissions, whether they're going to stay all virtual or whether they're going to go all back to in-person. We kind of ruled out a hybrid option because it's too complicated. There's too many meetings in too many different locations that don't have the infrastructure to accommodate in-person and virtual all at the same time. So more to come on that. My assumption is we'll all be meeting in person in October, but we'll see how COVID progresses and how the city progresses.
Are we going to have that at your house with a barbecue, John?
That's possible. Anything's possible.
Wear your mask.
I did have one question. I guess there were some stuff. We had a couple presentations. Is that any of that stuff can be distributed or posted on the website as part of the materials for the meeting? Or?
I can add them to the minutes as attachments if you send them to me.
Okay. I don't know, Ken, if you wanted to forward that stuff on to Vita.
Yeah, I'll give it a try.
Okay.
Very good.
You want that lead study? Or oh, John does have it.
Yeah. Okay.
John has it and his presentation
Pascal
as well.
Pascal has it, no, in your inbox.
Okay.
Let us know what you need, and then we'll get it to you.
Very good.
Between now and October.
All right.
Good seeing you all again, even if it is.
Yeah. All right.
Except for Ken.
Thank you all very much.